This is the Video School Online Podcast, session number 6. Check it.
Welcome to the Video School Online Podcast, where it's all about learning how to make better videos. And now, here's your host, Phil Ebner.
Hey guys, what's up? This is Phil Ebner with the Video School Online Podcast. So welcome to the show if you're listening to this on iTunes. Hello if you're watching this on YouTube. Hello, I'm glad to bring another guest to the show, a good friend, David Zaleski. We are both LMU Film School alumni, so that's where our roots began. But David is a great filmmaker, he is an animator, and he is the founder, owner, and creator of HedgehogSoup.com, which is a daily comic, the punniest comic on the web, and I check it out daily, and he is a really funny guy, so this is going to be a great interview, and I'm happy to have him on board. Hello, David.
Hello, Phil. Thank you for the intro. I hope I can keep it funny. That's a lot of pressure, but I'll give it a shot.
I'm sure it's going to be great. So today we're going to be talking about David's journey into film school, get some advice for all of you listeners. For everyone out there, this podcast is for videoschoolonline.com, so go ahead and check that out in your free time. There's lots of free like tips, tricks, and tutorials. I also have some online classes if you're interested in learning how to make better videos. So go ahead and check that out. And so let's get started. David, first of all, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Good evening, Phil. This is really fun. Thank you for having me on this.
Yeah, it's great. So let's talk about your introduction to film and to being a creative. What was it that, were you always creative? Were you, you know, always drawing when you were a kid? Because David is a great animator. He made a couple animated films in college, and in all of his videos he had animated segments to them, and now he's, you know, doing his own comic. So I wonder, how did you get into that?
Well, I started when I was 6 years old. I was in second grade, and I had a really weird teacher named Mrs. Shaw, who I actually kind of grew to like as I got older, because I didn't know that she really liked me at the time, but apparently she did. I was like one of her favorite students. But she was really strict, so I would just kind of try and find things to do in her class that didn't involve me having to pay attention to her weird hair and lectures. And she had and she used to smoke a lot outside. And while she was smoking outside, which, by the way, you're not supposed to do at a school with elementary school kids in it. So she turned on Reading Rainbow to keep us entertained, I guess, while she was out there smoking a cigarette. And there was this Reading Rainbow episode about covering, like, cartoonists. And, you know, I'd always loved reading cartoons, even at that young of an age. But I didn't know you could – I didn't make the connection that people did that, you know, that was a human hand that did that. And I saw people drawing and people, you know, people having a lot of fun with it and being funny. And I went home that day and I kind of thought, I can do that. So I sat down and I drew my first comic, which was a 6-panel comic about a guy who eats a donut and then gets food poisoning. It's nice. Awful. Well, it wasn't funny at all, but I was 6 and it was really charming now that I look back at it. And it's going to be hanging on my wall soon because it's kind of started this path in my life of going back to that as a sort of a way to center myself. Mm-hmm. And I was a really shy kid. I didn't have many friends in elementary school. I didn't have any friends in elementary school. So that was the thing I kind of did to keep myself company. I would create characters and I'd have them talk to each other and then kind of felt like they were talking to me. And it sort of became a sociological obsession just to keep myself – give myself some company as a kid.
Awesome.
Yeah. And then as I got friends and everything, I still continued it. It's just always the thing that I go back to whenever I feel alone or – down on myself. It's a real centering piece in my life.
Cool. So did you, after you became that kind of artist, did you know that you wanted to get into filmmaking at an early age, or was that when you were like applying to colleges? Did you just decide to apply to some film schools?
Yeah, that's a good question. I didn't know that I wanted to do film. I didn't even know I wanted to do animation. I wanted to be a cartoonist. That's the thing I wanted to do. But in high school and then graduating high school, I didn't know how to make that happen. I didn't know there were things called syndicates that you submitted your stuff to and that, you know, they put you in papers. And this was around the time papers were dying anyway, so like no one was hiring cartoonists really or editorializers.
Does that work? Because I don't know how that works. Is that still how it works today?
Yeah, so what happened traditionally is if you're a cartoonist, you'd submit your work to different syndicates, which are companies that distribute your material to newspapers and online newspapers and things like that. So there's, you know, the Universal UClick is a big one. There's a Creator Syndicate. There's a lot of different ones out there, but they mainly cater to newspapers, which of course are not doing very well. And this is another reason why those like advice column kind of things kind of are tanking now. It's because print media is kind of dead.
Yeah.
But yeah, you submit your stuff, and they, if they like it, they'll write a contract with you, and then you start producing material for them.
Nice, nice.
Yeah.
So then, what got you to apply to LMU Film School?
Well, my brother was into film and media and stuff like that. I have a identical twin brother. I don't know if your listeners know that, but he, you know, he still is my best friend, and I looked up to him, and he was doing this media and film stuff, and I was like, oh, that sounds fun. So I joined the media club at our school, and I took some media classes and started to produce pieces and video for our, you know, our school's channel. Uh-huh. And that was a lot of fun to me. That's when I first learned Final Cut Pro and Soundtrack and Motion and After Effects and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Was doing that. And I did that for a couple of years, and it was a lot of, you know, the lieutenant governor of our state, I'm from Hawaii, he came down to our school and did a little rally. And it was such a clear attempt to grab early voters, because he was going to run for governor in about 3 years. And he knew that these were going to be legal voters. So he came down cynically to be like, hey, I'm the lieutenant governor. Vote for – like, it was so clear that's what he did. So yeah. And he did. He did run for governor. He lost to Neil Abercrombie. So I took the footage from that video, and I put together a music video of his words interspliced saying what he was actually doing. So it was a music video, and I put them together saying things like, I force myself to care about you. The power.
Wow, so you were like doing this before that was popular on YouTube.
Yeah. That was my first. I bring that up because that was my first time dabbling into something that making fun of power, making fun of people in power. They actually aired that on the school's broadcast. Like everybody watched, like 2,000 kids watched this.
That's why he didn't win the election.
I'm sorry?
That's why he didn't win the election, because all the kids in the school saw your video.
I hope so. Wouldn't that be awesome to know I had that kind of power? But I offended like half the students and staff, and I got like angry like letters and emails and I just thought, awesome. That's just awesome. I need to keep doing this.
Yeah.
I just defending people like that. It was just a lot of fun. So that's what started. Anyway, I took those classes, and I realized that I wanted to get into doing this more. So I started to research film and television universities, and LMU, USC, Pitzer, Chapman. These were all ones that came up. I was forbidden by my parents to go to the East Coast because that's too far from Hawaii. So I kind of looked at West Coast schools.
Yeah.
And LMU, LMU is the one I chose. USC rejected me, but they brought in my brother. They accepted my brother for screenwriting, and LMU rejected him for screenwriting. Like, it was weird. It's like his writing was good enough for USC, but not LMU. And then I got rejected from USC production, but my production was good enough for LMU. So like it was kind of strange how our two paths worked out. But that's how we both ended up at our respective colleges. Yeah.
Cool. Well, I think it was all meant to be, because it seems like the path has been laid out for you, and I think good things are going to come.
Thank you. And I met you,
We were in the same class, and I mean, one of the best experiences we had was studying abroad in Germany. And I talked about this before in a previous podcast with Vince Patton, who was also in Germany. But let's talk a little bit about Germany and studying abroad, because that was our first real experience of we had to produce our own thesis projects as juniors, and that was a lot of work, but it was really fun being in Europe, getting to decide what our topic was going to be. The entire study abroad program was centered around filmmaking, and so we had all like filmmaking classes, and then we had about, you know, 2 weeks to shoot and then like a month just to edit. It was crazy. It was crazy. That's so insane. Talk to me about what your topic was and how you ended up choosing the topic. I mean, I know what your topic was, but talk about that to our listeners and how you incorporated, you know, your passion for comics and animation into that, in that documentary.
Sure. Well, my my topic for my documentary, I decided to do it on well, first I'll preface this with, I knew I didn't want to do a documentary that followed the same pattern as every other documentary you've ever seen. And it's not to say I did anything different. I just decided to do it in a humorous context. So my documentary focused on the influx of McDonald's into Europe. It was about a 15-minute or something documentary.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to film a baker or a restaurant owner who is there since, you know, the beginning of time and makes the food early and prepares it and really cares about her customers, and they come in and they patronize the store, and then it's a business. You know, that's a very charming old European way of doing things. It's the way America used to do things before, you know, we lost our minds and elected, you know, Ronald Reagan, and everything just kind of went downhill from there. I got an interview with this woman named, what was her name? Angelica Leitner or something. I'm totally butchering her last name, but she's this really wonderful old bakery shop owner.
This was in Germany.
This was in Reusdorf, a little north of Bonn. Mm-hmm. She had this great bakery, and she took me around, and we filmed her opening it up and servicing the customers, and they bake all the fresh bread, and, you know, this, it's just, you know, the family comes in and they buy loaves of bread for the, you know, it's just really charming and everything. And then I wanted to get an interview with a McDonald's person, like a spokesperson, to talk about McDonald's in Europe. And I was just going to intersplice those two things together.
Yeah.
And just show the context between her, this old school way of doing things and this new way of McDonald's coming in there. Anyway, the McDonald's woman decided that she would talk to me, but then bailed out at the last minute because the company got really scared. Like, they didn't know what I was doing. And so we ended up, me, John Besolo, who's a friend of mine, and his uncle Marcos, ended up standing around an auto show waiting for a phone call that never happened. And she just bailed on me. My interview just bailed on me. I wasn't going to make it a sarcastic or cynical documentary before that, but I was so mad she bailed on me. So John and I decided, okay, screw her. So we went around to different McDonald's and just filmed the people there. Just the fat, lazy, dumb, eating the McDonald's people there.
Yeah.
And all the shenanigans that went down. So we had a bunch of hidden cameras in there, and then put a documentary together that interspliced those moments with the charming moments and just showed how that is just something that they should avoid. Mm-hmm. It was sort of a satirical look at the different cultures and how American culture bleeding into European culture is going to ultimately ruin the European culture. So that's the way I decided to put it together, and I ultimately think it was pretty successful. I really enjoyed that project.
Yeah, it was great. What were some of, I mean, aside from, you know, having your interviewee bail on you, what were some of the, I guess, struggles of coming up with the topic and, you know, just from ground zero, like building a topic, finding subjects? Because sometimes, like, people might have an idea in their head, like, ah, I love skiing, or I love, I don't know, chalkboards, mm-hmm. or whatever, and they want to make a movie about it or a video about it, but they don't know how to start. So what advice do you have for, like, once people have an idea, what's the next step, and what's going to actually get people to, you know, instead of just having the idea in their head forever, to actually get out there and make something?
Well, I would say the first step is to work on your interpersonal skills, because that was a big challenge for me, was trying to be the kind of person who could approach strangers and be like, hey, can I stick a camera in your face and have you talk about your most personal moments and fears and struggles and stuff?
Yeah.
People don't usually want to talk about that with just anybody. And if you're not used to talking with people and you're not used to connecting with them emotionally and getting them to relate to you, it's just never going to happen. So if you want to, if you have a passion, I think, for a specific topic and you want to do a really meaningful documentary, one of the big first steps is to get to know the people involved really well and to get over your own inhibitions about approach. I mean, because it's really scary. You're approaching like strangers. They could be anybody, you know?
Yeah.
And you have a lot of knots in your stomach when you're doing it, but you got to push past that. And it's what I really had to do. It's why we only had one interview in my documentary, and aside from the woman bailing, but I really only wanted to get to know one person. In retrospect, I kind of I wish I had interviewed a few more, but I was really shy in that environment. You know, it's Germany, it's new, not a lot of people speak English. But if you're making a documentary about a subject you're passionate about, yeah, honing in on that is pretty paramount to most anything else. And the other thing is to, yeah, make sure it's something that you really are passionate about, the topic. It's people can smell bullshit kind of a mile away. They know when you're making something that you're not necessarily into, whether it be narrative or documentary. There's just something about it. It's like watching bad special effects. It's like your eye notices something off about it. So if it's a topic you just go inside your head like, I could do that. That might be interesting. That tone is going to translate onto screen. People are going to go, all right, well, I guess that was interesting. But if it's something you're really passionate about, like the environment or like what I was with McDonald's or with like you were with your bike documentary, which was wonderful, or Sam with his documentary, you know, that's going to shine through. They're going to see that passion because you're going to put so much time and effort into it that you're going to get lost in it. And then people are going to watch it and be like, that was phenomenal.
Yeah. And I guess I feel like, you know, speaking of my bike documentary, like I said, I was very passionate about that. And it's something that lately I've been struggling to find something that I'm as passionate about to make my next documentary. Because I'm always thinking like or wishing that, you know, wondering when I'm going to make my next documentary. I hope to make like a feature-length documentary sometime in the nearer future. But I just haven't found that topic yet that I'm so passionate about that I'm going to spend, you know, hours and hours and nights thinking about and producing and sweating and crying over, because that's what it takes to make a great film.
Yeah. Motivation is like that. I think everybody, whether you are coming out of film school or you're just starting out, which is actually just harder if you're not coming out of film school, you go through this depression, like this slump, and where you're just not motivated to do anything. It takes a lot of external stimulus, especially in college or with your family or peers, to get you motivated for a specific subject.
Yeah.
And when it's just you deciding to launch your career, the motivation factor is huge. And a lot of people my age and at whatever age you are, really, that's a big problem. You know, if you're asking like, how do you find the inspiration for a topic? You know, that's an interesting question. I'm not sure if I have the answer for that, but I think the first step is, you know, what would you be doing if you had nothing to do? I think that's a good place to start. If that's drawing like me, or if that's biking like you, or if that's traveling like some friends of mine, or exploring, that's a great place to start. Start from there, and then you'll find it, I think.
Totally. Video making, filmmaking, or just any creative job is so different than, well, everything else where they, you know, they have everything lined out for you. You just have to follow a certain path. You get, you know, you interview with a certain person, and then your job is going to be a certain thing every day after that, and if you love it, that's good, because then you're going to love it and it's going to be the same. But as creators, we kind of have to build, you know, that job for ourselves or that film or whatever. And it is hard to, you know, get that started.
It's hard for people. If you have an ego about yourself starting out, you're going to have a really shitty time starting out, because you really, I mean, no matter who you are and who your father is or mother is or whatever, you really got to prove yourself, and that's the hardest thing to do. And you're only going to do that with friends, and if you alienate all of them, that's a recipe for disaster. I guess that's another tip I would say, is don't alienate your friends. You'll need them a lot.
definitely. So after Germany, we came back, we were in film school for another year. Can you talk to me a little bit about, you know, the last year making your thesis film and then graduating, and what happened after graduation? How did you land your first jobs? What advice do you have for, you know, not only film students, but just people in general trying to find jobs after college, stuff sure. like that.
That's quite the list. I'll start with just coming back from Germany. I'll bite size through it.
Yeah.
When I came back from Germany, I got fired from Lighting and Grip, the Lighting and Grip department at our school. Mm-hmm. Not because I did a bad job or anything, but they just fired everybody who came back from Bonn. They needed to save money, and that was an easy way to get rid of some people.
Yeah.
So I was jobless. So that's when I realized I should take my cartooning back up. This is part of the right reason I said, what would you be doing if you're doing nothing else? I wasn't doing anything, and I was like, but I was still drawing. Yeah. So I submitted my comics to the university paper, and they brought me on as a contributor. And then about a few months later, they brought me on as the editorial cartoonist and then as the cartoon editor. So I was the cartoon editor for the last 2 years of college. Meanwhile, I had been spending the last 3 years prior to my graduation working on this film called Theodore, which was a half stop motion, half hand-drawn animated film yeah. about a teddy bear who goes into a world of fairy tales and saves Goldilocks from the three bears.
Yeah.
And it was like a 3 month long experiment / expansive animation landscape. Like, it was stop motion in the beginning, and then in the middle there was charcoal animation, and then there was watercolors animation near the end, and it was just a great way for me to really sharpen my drawing skills. And I mean, it's part of the reason I can do it so well now is because I spent all my time doing that film for 3 years. And so finally we finished the film, and it went to Morocco, went to a film festival in Morocco, sponsored by the U.S. Embassy. I don't know why I had to say U.S. Embassy. It's our embassy. We know that. but it went there with a couple of other films and filmmakers. One was Kiki Manriquez, who's a really amazing animator, and her film actually won Best Picture last year. Okay. And then Scott Oler, who's a phenomenal documentarian, and his film won Best Documentary this year at Film Outside the Frame.
Uh-huh.
So the three of us were sent to Morocco to travel around and show our films to different film schools there. And that was that week and a half made that 3 years totally worth it. That was really awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was really great. So after graduation, I started doing freelance stuff. I was hired to illustrate a medical book for the UK. It was a book about holistic healing mixed with modern medicine, and they needed some realistic looking house-esque illustrations, and that's something I had never done before. So I did that for a month, and that got me good at doing portrait art. I was then brought on by LMU to do a 10-minute cartoon, sort of funny animation for the university paper's 90th anniversary. And President Burcham, who's the president of LMU, our school, was the voice in most of it. I got to sit down with him and make him say funny things. I'd hand him a piece of paper and be like, okay, can you say smack your butt? Okay, smack your butt. Thank you, President. Okay, can you say look at all these LMUers, hot, and then really put emphasis on hot. And I made him say, and he said it, and it's just like, and by the way, that moment, doing that with that man, was that the moment I'm like, I gotta do this as a career, because people are so giddy about animation. Oh. You can go to the president of a university and say, I'm gonna make you a cartoon. Just say these words, and the president of the university will drop what he's doing and go, oh, that's cool. How do I say that? You know, it's just it's just amazing.
Is this video somewhere where we can see that? Is it online now?
I did put it online. I'm not sure if I can. It's owned by the Loyolan, so I'm not sure if I can. I'll give you the link off mic, and I'll find out if you can give it to your listeners. But I'm not sure if
but
I can.
But they never posted it.
No, I did. It's on Vimeo. It's not password protected. So wink, wink. If you want to Google those keywords, you could probably find it. But I'll give you the link after. So yeah, that was about a couple months of work, and then I did some animation, and then I was brought on as an animator for a web series for Loyola Productions, this independent Catholic production company. They were doing a 15-episode web series about Lent, and there was a little boy in the series who is a drawer, and I was him, like basically, like I did his illustrations for the production, and then it kind of like melted into some animation segments, and so that was a few months of doing that work, which was backbreaking, but really worth it. It went to a bunch of festivals and it won some awards, and it was really cool. And then I was approached by this magazine to come on board, and I, having come from a journalist background in that college, and knowing that the freelance thing, while satisfying, was really unstable. I didn't know what my next thing was going to be. Mm-hmm. I decided, you know, to take it. And I've been doing writing and associate producing for an online magazine called iMedia, which is a business and technology magazine, and I do their videos. I write some of their articles, some of the copy on their articles for the videos, and it's a daily publication, and that's a lot of fun. It's just great to be back doing something in journalism.
Nice. We'll have all the links for those websites in the show notes, so if you're listening to this, it'll be on the blog or on YouTube. They'll be down below. What advice do you have for film, in particular film students or filmmakers, on getting those first jobs? Because that's one thing that I worried a lot about when I was graduating, and everyone worries about getting their first job. So what piece of advice do you have for that?
Yeah, well, that's true. Everyone worries about it. Everyone graduates and they either, you know, the lucky ones get hired out of college, but that's like 95% don't. And that's normal. That's fine. First step is don't be upset about your friends who do get hired out of college. It's going to happen. There's just going to be a few stars that happens, you know? Mm-hmm. The second thing is you really got to know. I mean, I know it's weird to say, like, you have to know what you want to do with this young, because we're all young, and it's kind of unfair to say that. But if you want to avoid doing a job that you're going to find menial or just taskful, have a general sense of where you want to take your career and apply for positions that are kind of going to cater to that. And when I say that, I mean, like, don't be so focused on finding a job that you're just going to apply. Oh, administrative assistant at Sony. Well, I see the word Sony and I see the word job, so I'm going to apply to that. Really want to be an administrative assistant? Like, and if you don't, then just don't apply for it. You're going to be unhappy.
And is that going to enhance you or take you to the next step towards your ultimate goal?
It's not. And it's going to start you on a career path that you're going to get stuck in, because you're going to get addicted to the paycheck. No matter what you do, you're going to get addicted to the paycheck and you're going to get addicted to the culture. But that's a good thing if it's a good company culture. But make sure that your bosses know what you're doing. Is you want to be set on a career path that you want to eventually, you know, let your bosses know, I eventually want to be this thing, but I'm willing to do this other thing really well first. And if you start in a career path that you don't like at all, like administrative assistant or, you know, secretary or whatever, that's going to put you on a career. You're going to do that well, and then they're going to move you up that chain of command. So if you want to be a director, you know, start out, do PA work. That's cool. But also do your own work. Go home and plan your own projects and start to direct films. That way, even if you're not getting paid for it, like, I can't tell you how happy I am that I've done my own projects, my own animation projects, because even just today, I was telling you earlier off air that, like, I had an interview with Disney Interactive because they're going to do a web series, and they might want to bring me on as an animator for that. And I basically showed the reel I showed them was basically all projects I didn't get paid for. It was just me doing it. There was like three things on there I might have gotten a paycheck for, but most of it was just me doing it in my free time. But that was the work that really stood out, and that's the stuff I showed. And had I not done that, because I was just saying to myself, "Oh yeah, I don't, you know, I'm just doing freelance. I don't need to do anything for myself." I would have nothing to show. I never would have gotten that meeting. Yeah. So do your own work if you want to be a director. If you want to be an editor, you know, really do apply for those jobs. Yeah. If you want to be an administrative assistant, that's cool. Go out and go for that. But make sure it's something that you want to do vaguely. And then you'll be happy. And then the other thing I'll just say is you're going to get really, it's really stressful and it's really emotional to get rejected from a bunch of things. But that's just going to happen. You're not going to, every job you apply for is not going to call you back, and that's fine. And you don't want them to. And if you always take those things just so personally and you get that knot, like, I get a terrible knot in my stomach whenever I have failure happen to me or something big happens to me. It's like this nausea that I feel.
Yeah.
And it comes from elementary school stuff. But like, I've learned that having those feelings that's not a good thing. And you really got to step back and look at it. And you know, it really is true. When one door closes, the little doggy door opens and you can stick your foot through. No, that's not how the saying goes. Is that? No. Oh yeah, one door closes, a window opens. That's what it is. But that is kind of true, you know. And you want to get rejected from the jobs you applied for in desperation. I'll just put it that way. That's a good thing. I'm glad I got rejected from a bunch of jobs I applied for because I was like, this is the thing you do after college. You apply for jobs. I got rejected, and I'm so happy that it happened because now I'm at a place that I like and I'm doing work that I enjoy. And I'm only 23. I got a long way to go, but right now things are good, and it's because it's you just learn from failure, you know. It's survival of failure, and that's life, I think.
That's so awesome. Well said. And I think one of the things that stuck out to me the most is that you got this interview with Disney Interactive, and you showed them all this work that you basically did for free. And that's what I've found, you know, interviewing a couple people before, that most of their jobs they're getting are from, you know, doing work either for free or for very cheap, just because it's what they love. I talked to, before we had a cinematographer on who, you know, he just loves shooting. So during school, he just shot as many movies as he could.
Oh, no, he didn't shoot during school, did he? Like, oh, that kind of shooting. Oh, okay.
Yes.
Oh. All right.
Thanks for that. He filmed in school. And, you know, because of those free gigs that he did, it turned into an interview and it turned into a job. And I hope that this, you know, all your work turns into a job, which brings me to, we haven't really talked specifically about what your comic is. You started this series, Hedgehog Soup. You can find it at hedgehogsoup.com. It's a great, great series. It's a daily comic. It literally makes me laugh every time that I see them. You know, I check it out on my Facebook breaks during the day. So let's talk about that. How did you get that started, and what went into, you know, starting your own website, and what are you doing to promote it, and what kind of response have you gotten from that?
Well, it's a website I started in September, late September of 2012. It was always a goal of mine to be published somewhere. And, you know, as I mentioned before, syndicates are kind of dying because print media is dying and they haven't figured out a business model for digital yet. And I always knew that I wanted a webcomic. I mean, not like a normal webcomic where it's you put it on. Nothing against WordPress or anything like that, but like, you know, that's kind of, you can put comics on WordPress and stuff like that. But I wanted to build it from, I'm so OC, I wanted to build it from the ground up, but I didn't know how to do that. But actually, when I got this my current job, they taught me how to write HTML code. And at the time, I'm like, I don't even know this. This is stupid. But then over time, I'm realizing, like, wait, I can make a website with this information. So I learned it, and I built the site. I started with 30 comics or so initially, just so people had things to look at. Mm-hmm. And it's very basic. Like, it's only a few months old, but it's very basic. Yeah, like you mentioned, hedgehogsoup.com, and it's my core. It gives me motivation to draw every day, which is something I need. Knowing that I can publish every day, regardless of who's reading, it just is really nice to put it out there. And it's another good example of me not getting paid for something, but I know that's going to pay off for me in the long run, because who knows, maybe later I will want to do an illustration job or something. And that's something I can point to that's online that people can look at, and they'll go, hey, he's been doing this since 2012. This is really cool. I'm really happy with the response it's gotten so far. Not that the metrics matter to me, but it gets like a few thousand unique visitors a month. And a few thousand page views a month. I have to measure this via a month just because I'm practiced that way with my current job. Yeah. I'm really happy people are enjoying it. I've gotten no angry emails so far about any of them. It's pretty adult humor. I should preface it that way. But no angry emails. A couple of really good complimentary emails. And everyone on – yeah, my friends on Facebook have been really supportive of it, and people I know. And it's – yeah, like I said, it's a really fun way for me to be able to draw every day and know that there's a goal toward that. I'm going to put it online and people are going to read it. Some will like it, some will hate it, but that's what's fun about it. I love offending people sometimes. I mean, that's like the most fun thing in the world, because when you offend people, you start a conversation in their head, and there's nothing more powerful than that, you know? Yeah, I think.
That's great. No, I love it. And I mean, I hope that it turns into – you know, either getting a job somewhere else or someone sees it and is like, I want to pay you for this, so can you keep doing this?
Yeah. Or it gets enough traffic that I can just put ads on it. That's a big step for site, but you can generate revenue that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, the goal of it isn't to make money for me. Not that that wouldn't be nice in the future. Yeah. The goal is really to keep me sane, because after college or entering the film industry or whatever you're doing in film, it's so – jobs come, they go. You're one people, they say they call you, they're not going to call you the next day. Yeah. It's so sporadic and things – it just gets so stressful and can get a little depressing at times. Yeah. And so this is something that, for me personally, that I can do that I know is stable and that it's there. And I can vent on it, and it's a platform.
Yeah.
And whether that be a webcomic or whether that be a film you want to direct or a web series you want to work on the weekends, or, you know, people you want to interview for, say, a podcast, a wonderful podcast that you can find online at Phil's Great Video School. It's good to have a core to your daily life like that. It's good to have little goals like that, whether you're getting paid for them or not. I think it's super important.
Totally, because I love my day job, but I love coming home and, you know, writing a blog post about how to make better videos and, you know, getting some responses. And I mean, just going back to your site, I think, you know, hopefully you can, you know, get enough views to maybe make a little bit of ad generated revenue. But also, I mean, if you do this for a year, turn that into like a calendar, or you could turn it into like a book, ebook, or something like that. I mean, I think the quality is there to, you know, actually sell it. And I know with the online classes that I'm teaching, like, I've started out just thinking, like, whatever, like, you know, I'm just going to do it. But then when someone bought it for the first time and they like paid money to take it, I was like, that is like the coolest feeling in the world, is like to think that something that I created like not only helped someone, but they also gave me money for it.
So, yeah. And that's actually a great transition into another thing I should have mentioned before, which was eventually you're going to start getting paid for projects. That it's not so much about the money. It's about the money is a recognition that they value you.
Yeah.
And that recognition itself is really inspiring. It's just really nice. Not to say unpaid projects aren't important. But the first time you get paid for something that you love to do, you go, whoa, that's money. Like, people value something I take for granted personally. That's really insane. But yeah, that must have been a wonderful feeling when that happened. That's awesome.
Yeah. Very cool. So I think we're pushing the time limit here, but I want to get your, I always ask my guests, what is one piece of advice for our listeners that will help them to create better videos? One, you know, whether it's tangible, specifically like trade, like how do you do an animation or whatever you have, what's one piece of advice that will kind of help our listeners?
I would say I'm going to swear, but don't bullshit it. Don't do something that you're not passionate about. Don't make a video if it's not something you like, that you want to do. Don't just make it because you're going to make it, you know?
Yeah.
Make sure it's something that you want to make, because everything else will fall into place. Like, I could say, like, okay, know the programs, have a lot of connections, make the friends, but getting kind of under that, if it's not something that you really want to do and it's not a video or a project you really want to do, regardless of how many people you get involved, except if you're Michael Bay, but it's not going to be a good video. It's just not. Yeah. So to make a better video, whether it be animation, documentary, film, just make sure that the project and the topic and the story and the humor and the emotion, whatever you got going on in there, is something you really do. Have an honest conversation with yourself and ask yourself if this is something you really want to put time into. And if the answer is yes, more power to you. It's going to be awesome. If the answer is no, take a break and find something else that you want to make a video about. And then I'm telling you, everything else will fall into place.
Great. Thank you so much, David. So our listeners can find your comic on hedgehogsoup.com. Is there anywhere else that you are at, if you're any social media or anything, that they can see your work or anything else?
At David_Zaleski is my Twitter handle. You can YouTube my animations at David Zaleski, just YouTube David Zaleski, or just YouTube Hedgehog Soup, which is probably easier to spell because my last name is complicated. Zaleski spelled Zaleski, and yeah, like you said, hedgehogsoup.com. And thank you, Phil, so much.
Yeah, really quick question. How do you get – what's the name from Hedgehog Soup?
When I was starting out at the Loyolan, I started doing a single panel comic and I didn't have a name for it. Mm-hmm. And I got a call from my then editor who asked me, "We're going to publish in 5 minutes. What should the name of your comic be?" And I was like, and the first two words, I was eating a bowl of soup, and the first two words that popped into my brain were soup and then hedgehog for some reason. I don't know why hedgehog popped in. I'm assuming it was divine inspiration.
Yeah.
But and I almost said soup hedgehog, but then I thought, no, that's stupid. And then I was like, okay, hedgehog soup. And I was like, I said that with the idea I can change it later, but then it kind of grew on me. I love hedgehogs. I love soup. It's my favorite thing, my food. Hedgehog soup. I just think it works.
It works. Thank you, David, for everyone listening or watching. Thank you for tuning in. Check out the website, videoschoolonline.com. I post weekly blog articles with tips and tricks to make your videos better. There's, of course, all the podcasts that you can catch up on and online courses. So if you're interested in video making, there's classes such as video editing, kinetic typography, green screen, and lots of classes for you to make better videos. So thank you for listening and watching, and we will see you next time.